So I'm meeting Alfie in person for the first time. We're sitting in her little corner office, and in comes her assistant. She says, "The family's here." And I'm like, "The family?
The family?"
I thought the mom was coming, you know. She's like, "Oh no, we didn't fit in the small conference room. We have to go to the conference room."
Oh,
I was
wow.
scared to death. And I was like, "Well, good thing I brought my Bible because I don't know what else to do or say." And I walked in this room with more people were all standing and crowded in this room, three generations of family, openly wailing and crying, missing Tim. And they like put me at the head of the conference table and were like, "Okay." And I was like, I just wanted to tell them I would gift them with a headstone.
Yes.
And I'm sitting with like ministering to this family, and I opened my Bible and I was like, "Well, let's get started." And I just read some scripture and prayed for them. And I just was like, "Lord, Lord, 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 like, what do I do? What do I, you know, what do I do? I'm not a chaplain. I'm not a family, a funeral home director. I'm not all these things. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing." And he said, "Just ask them about Tim."
Hi friends, you've made it to Karina Faith Diaries, your new go-to spot for real talk about the journeys that shape our faith. I'm Karina, your host, and I'm super excited to chat about real life struggles, wins, and everything in between. This is all about honest conversations, lifting each other up, and the power of a relationship with Jesus. Whether you're here to learn, connect, or to get inspired, let's get started together. In 2009, Linda's life took an expected turn when she saw a news story about an infant's body found in a dumpster. Moved by the tragedy, she made it her mission to ensure no child would ever die without a name or dignity. Through her ministry, He Knows Your Name, she works with coroners, hospitals, and funeral homes to provide proper burials for unclaimed children and adults. Linda also partners with organizations like Safe Haven Baby Boxes to raise awareness about the Safe Haven law and help prevent infant abandonment. Her powerful story has been featured on the Steve Harvey Show, Life Today, and the Indianapolis Star. We are so honored to have Linda in the house today. Okay, guys, we are here today with author and the founder of He Knows Your Name, Linda Znako. Thank you so much for being here. I'm very eager to hear. We were talking here off camera and I'm reading her book. And I'm just so eager to hear your entire story. Mm. It's so filled with so many pearls. Mm. Let's start with your upbringing.
I am the middle child of seven.
Oh.
And I was raised in the Chicago area, and it was a crazy, chaotic world. For me as an introvert, which people don't think I am, but I am, it was a lot. I felt pretty squeezed growing up, you know, but I have a really loving family and loving parents, and I was wanted and adored. And I know that that has fueled me and given me the well I have in me for God to use for the work I have to do. And then I met my high school sweetheart, Steve, in high school.
Wow.
And we dated our senior year. We went all through college dating, and then we got married after that. And we then settled in Indianapolis a year after we got married. And then we have had our four children here.
Wow.
And born and raised all of them here, and then adopted one in 2020. So we have five children together, and it's just quite a story.
I bet. Of
so many things.
Amazing.
So 42 years of marriage, I'm so proud of, and I just am so thankful for my thriving marriage, and we work really hard on it,
mm-hmm.
and we believe in working on marriage and having it be the stable like foundation for everything we do.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's marriage does take work. It's not just the breeze that you go through and it's all.
No.
And we have to prioritize and make it
right.
Honor God
totally.
In it. And I feel like people, if we do, we'll have a thriving marriage.
Yeah.
So what was your family, a Christian family growing up?
We were Catholic growing up.
Okay.
And we did go to church, but I did not know Jesus, and I was never introduced to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't introduced to, even though my parents had great values, they were not like biblical values. And so I didn't understand the difference between living biblically and then living just good and doing good deeds.
Like religion, following religion versus following Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you come about, how did you get to know Jesus?
So we moved to Indianapolis and we didn't know anyone here.
Mm-hmm.
And we met some people at the gym we were working out at. and they were talking about being Christians. And I was like, I've never heard anyone say that. The community I was raised in was like, we're Catholic, we're Methodist, we're Episcopalian.
Same.
And so I was like, I don't know why you call yourself that. And so they would tell me, and I was like, well, I mean, I believe Jesus was conceived by the Virgin Mary and born by the Holy Spirit. And I believed all the things all the way to Easter. I did. Sure. I believed it all. I accepted it all. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have a relationship with Jesus. I wasn't in the Word and filled with the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And so when I was 26 years old, after living here a little bit and then pregnant with my first daughter, we started going to a different church. And that's where the gospel was shared. And when I heard it for the first time, it's like everything woke up in me, like, oh my goodness, that's what I've been waiting to hear my whole life.
Yes.
It just filled the holes that were there.
Yeah.
And I felt immediately and radically different. Being filled and baptized by the Holy Spirit was a very radical shift in me. And I was 26 at the time. I mean, I was 64. I'm going to be 65 this summer. So, but I mean, I remember thinking at the time, oh my goodness, I've lived my whole life and I haven't known this. Yes. I have to go tell everyone. And that really woke up like an evangelism spirit in me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have to tell my family. And so Steve and I were really the first born again Christians in both of our families. And since then, both my parents became born again. Most of my siblings have. And like all their children are being raised in Christian homes. Aww. And now there's that next generation because we have children.
Yeah.
And so it's just been a really beautiful thing. I started praying back when I was 26 that I would see every person in my family come to Christ in my lifetime,
Aww.
That I would see it. And I don't even know why I thought those things, but mm-hmm. it was just that important to me. And the Lord is delivering on that. It's been really beautiful.
I love that you said that because I pray for family members too, mm-hmm. for both my husbands and my family, to come to know Him the way that we know Him, because mm-hmm. it's different than the religion that they think we follow. And I love that you said, in my lifetime. I've never said that mm-hmm. before. So I would love to see that too. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start praying that.
Yes. Then God, let that be a prayer and a confession by Karina, and let it be so.
Oh, amen.
Yes.
Amen.
Yes.
That would be amazing.
Yes.
Okay. So then you guys are raising kids. You are getting to know Jesus. You're on fire, which I feel like a lot of us are mm-hmm. when we first hear and still are. Yeah. But it's just such an incredible feeling that mm-hmm. you want everybody to experience. Mm-hmm. And so how did the whole He Knows Your Name came to life? Was that around that time?
Oh, no. So I raised my kids. My husband traveled and I was in Bible study religiously, to use that word. I mean, I started Bible study right when I became a believer and I have not stopped. I am in the Word every day and it just fuels me and gives me really every kind of vision I need. And I know now, even with He Knows Your Name, that the blueprint of He Knows Your Name is from His Word. And so it also has helped as I have said yes to God. I know it's Him, you know, and so I hear Him clearly in that. But I had raised my kids and we were in a season of life where my daughter had gotten married. My mother had just died of cancer after an 18-month battle with cancer at 74 years old. And my dad had battled congestive heart failure for so long. I always thought he would go first. And then my mom surprisingly got lung cancer.
Wow.
And I just tried to pour into her as much as I could. And then she died in June. And then in October, so I wasn't looking for anything to do. Like, you've got to, if I set the stage and say, like, I am in grief over my mom. I had, my daughter had just gotten married. My son was back at Baylor and I still had two girls at home. And I was still very much my stay-at-home mom role.
Sure.
And wasn't looking for anything next. You know, I just wasn't there yet. We weren't close to an empty nest stage or anything like that. And so my little plug there is, you know, keep saying yes to God, because even though the timing doesn't seem right, you don't know what He's building and doing. Mm-hmm. And I honestly shudder at the thought of what if I would have said no, not now. At 49 in that season, what the heck would I be doing right now?
Wow.
Because He Knows Your Name is 15 years old now. Now, I didn't know about He Knows Your Name.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know what God was doing. But now, sitting where I am as a long-term empty nester, now with 15 years of He Knows Your Name behind me, and so much vision for more. I wonder, like, oh, he was building something. He was only asking me and inviting me to do one thing. And the one thing he asked me to do when I was sitting at the computer, watching the computer screen and the news, breaking news story came on that a baby was found in a dumpster downtown Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And the caution tape is across the parking lot. People are milling and the coroner's climbing in to the dumpster and the police are everywhere. Sirens, you know, it was very captivating. I couldn't like not watch it. Mm-hmm. And I watched these people climb in and they're talking about this baby found in a dumpster wearing only a baby doe found in a dumpster wearing only a diaper. Oh. And it like seared in my heart in that moment, like from heaven, doe is not a name. A dumpster is not a grave. And a diaper is not burial clothing. Mm. And it was like God just spoke his economy, which is always upside down, over what I was looking at and hearing he gave me in my heart. And I was like, oh, what do I do? Now, granted, we all see a lot on the news that, yes, that is hard,
breaking,
disturbing, and our heart races over. Mm-hmm. But this one I could not let go of. I knew it was mine. I knew, without knowing, I knew it was an invitation into something. And I was like, what do I do? You know? And the Lord was like, make a phone call. And I was like, no, I can make a phone call. Like, I can do that.
Yeah.
And so I called the coroner. And I spoke with the receptionist and I said, hey, what's going to happen to this baby?
Yeah.
And she said, well, I don't know. Like, we don't really have a plan. And babies, like, could be put in a mass grave. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, we're in America in the 21st century. Like, what are you saying? And she's like, well, I don't know. Like, there's no name. There'll just be a grave. The baby will be after the criminal investigation. And I was just like, I don't even know what you're saying. We live in the most resourced country in the world. Mm-hmm. How can you be saying what you're saying to me? This is such an injustice. I was like coming out of my chair. Mm. And I didn't even know that I had such a strong justice meter in me. But that is when God chose
triggered
to like turn up the yes. heat and say, girl, this is what I made you for. And so I got on the phone with the coroner and I told her all the things. And I said, I want to bury this baby and make sure this baby has a name. And she was like, well, okay. And I was like, well, like how many people have called and who's wondering about this and what are we going to do? No. She's like, well, no one else has called.
Oh.
And I, again, felt God's light from heaven come down and hit me and said, girl, this is just yours.
Job.
It's yes. yours. And of course I didn't understand it at all. I didn't have a clue. I was feeling it all, mm-hmm. you know? And she said that the criminal investigation could take a while. And I was like, I've got nothing but time. I'm not in a hurry. Like, this is fine. I'll just kind of work on it, get it all set up, and go from there. And that's what I did. And I waited. That criminal investigation took 13 months. And I called the coroner every single Friday morning.
Which I was amazed by it in your book. I'm like, she's still calling after a year. I'm like, oh my gosh. And like, no news every week. And
no, I know.
Your resilience to, and your persistence to keep on calling. A lot of us would have given up in like the first 3 months. Okay, God, this is like, that was a mistake. I misheard you. Like, I'm including myself in that. I am so inspired by your perseverance and your determination to following up on that.
Thank you. I couldn't help it. It was a life of its own inside of me. I mean, I woke up every Friday morning. I didn't have to have it on my calendar. I didn't have to have a reminder on my phone. I just woke up every morning with like this intention to get on the phone and ask them what's going on. And now, mind you, though, all the while, other things were starting to happen because I was calling that office every Friday morning. I was building relationships with the receptionist and the coroner and the tech. And I'd be like,
God doesn't waste anything.
Totally. Right? I mean, that season was, it was a pregnancy kind of like, no, I'm working on something. It's going to be fulfilled. But in the meantime, we got to keep building. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that. But months into the waiting, I called and they said, oh my gosh, we were just going to call you. And I was like, you never call me. What's going on? And they said, we have another baby. And I said, wait, I don't understand that. I haven't seen that baby on the news. You know, I have only one grid that I can see what they're talking about. And they said, no, this baby was 5 months old, died at the grandparents' home. We thought it was a criminal investigation, but it wasn't. There was no foul play. Baby died of SIDS, but the family's not going to take care of this baby in death. And I was like, I don't understand what you're saying. You know who they are. Mm-hmm. You know the mother and the grandmother. You knocked on her door. You went and picked up that baby there. Mm-hmm. And they say no?
Yeah.
Like, sit with that for a minute, right? And so I'm like, this isn't just a mom or a dad somewhere. This is an entire family. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, the baby's been here a while. And now we're considering that baby abandoned.
They just like shipped the baby there, or?
So they took the baby there. So when, you know, like 911 is called, baby's not breathing, the baby goes to the ER. But when a baby dies in the ER, they automatically go to the coroner's office. Or if they suspect foul play and there needs to be an investigation, baby goes to the coroner's office.
Okay.
And so that's what happened. Well, then soon after being there, they quickly realized, oh no, this is a SIDS baby and there is no foul play. And so they call the family back right away. And the family doesn't answer the call, doesn't come to the door, doesn't come back, doesn't.
Okay.
And I know through all the social media I do of raising awareness and educating, this is the one thing nobody understands. And they keep asking me the same question. Wait, how can this happen? Yeah. And I don't have an answer for that. And I kind of think it's really good that I don't have an answer, because mm-hmm. it's not in me to do that kind of thing, or you.
Yeah.
And if you're asking the question, you wouldn't be that person either.
Could it be that they can afford to have, because that's costly, right? To bury a baby.
It can be.
Yeah.
It can
be. And I feel like a lot of those families might be lower income. Yes.
Yeah. And some aren't.
Yeah.
You know? And so I would say what I have learned, and I'm not cynical about this. Mm-hmm. It's just something I've observed and learned. And that is that they just say no. They just don't want to. Because there are resources all over this city
that can help.
Hospitals, coroner's office, me, all kinds of organizations. The trustee's office and Marion County trustee's office will give families a voucher to help them. And, you know, I know a hospital here in town that makes appointments for families to say, okay, we'll make the appointment at their trustee's office. We'll buy you your bus pass so that you can go. We'll go with you. Mm. And they don't show up. They don't go. I don't get that whole trail of no's. I don't get it at all. But baby Zachary ended up being the first baby I buried. Mm-hmm. And everything I had planned for the other baby, I just executed for him. And I thought, oh, maybe this is it. Mm-hmm. This is the baby I'm supposed to. I kept thinking this whole time that this was an episodic calling. Mm-hmm. But when I got off the phone with the coroner, because this is what she said to me, she said, I'm just wondering if you would take care of this baby. And I said, I'm like reeling. And I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't I? Because if I'm going to take care of one baby, of course I should take care of the other baby. And she said, yeah, I was just wondering, like, can your organization do that? And I was like, what?
My what?
I don't have an organization. This is just me. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, and I literally pulled over and just cried and was like, Lord, what? And he said, it is. It's you and me. And he knows your name. And he clearly told me. And I just wept and wept. And I was like, okay. And that was really, really the second thing I did, but the first burial. And then later in those months, I'm calling the coroner's office. And the coroner says to me, hey, we've got this unique situation. I've got this mom whose 13-year-old boy drowned at Douglas Park Pool. They've buried him. They've had a funeral. But she can't afford a headstone. She's very pregnant. She's very emotional. And she's just not coming to grips with this. And I'm just wondering, if she had a headstone, would she feel closure? Mm. And I'm wondering if your organization would provide a headstone for her. And I was like, well, okay. And I said, I would love to meet with this mom. Now, mind you, I've not met with a mom yet, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, oh, I would love to meet with this mom. She said, I'll arrange that. Come here. I had not even gone to the coroner's office yet.
I was going to say, I love this coroner's office. Like, they care.
Oh,
they
care. Elfie McGinty is...
It's just not something you see. Yes, it's so refreshing to read this, because we have such a bad picture painted over the police being heartless and cold and not caring, that tells a different story. Yes. I mean, they cared so much that they were...
Right.
Hoping to help all these women, totally. And it's so beautiful.
And I call them the forgotten first responders, because when we think of a crime scene or an accident, and we think fire and police go, right? Mm-hmm. An ambulance goes. No one ever thinks of the coroner.
Yeah.
They are 24/7.
Really?
And they go and they're there. They're the ones that knock on the door of the families.
Wow.
They're the ones that meet with families in their office afterwards. They're the ones standing and holding up a mom who's just had to identify her child. They are the ones. The police and fire are gone. Their jobs are done. Mm-hmm. And I know the coroner's office staff. They keep their people. I was just at this event that they had. People have been there 40 years.
Wow.
They go and they don't leave. They are a family. They are beautiful humans living, honestly, the most sacrificial lives. And what they do for the people in our county, in our state, is absolutely remarkable. And I love them. Their hearts are huge. And I couldn't be more thrilled that Alfie McGinty, who was that first coroner that took my call, is now the coroner official, elected official at Marion County Coroner's Office.
Oh my God.
She was chief deputy for years under other coroners, because now she's my third coroner in 15 years. Wow. But she deserves it through and through. And she has so much vision for how to support this community and bring dignity and honor to life. It's amazing. Wow. I respect her so much, and I count her to be such a dear friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for her and the relationship and friendship we have had over all these years.
That's
so
amazing.
Yes, over those phone calls, I was doing that with many people there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would answer the phone and I'd say, oh, so, you know, Marshall, what's going on with you today? Or whatever, so-and-so, whoever happened to answer the phone. And I was like, what can I pray for you today? And it was like, oh, I'm going in for some breast cancer treatment. Or I have this, or my son that. And I'm like, so I'm praying with people over the phone all these months. But I hadn't met Alfie in person. Mm-hmm. And so when I said, yes, I want to meet this mom and tell me her name, and tell me a little bit about her, and I'll come and meet her. I hadn't even met Alfie in person. So I'm meeting Alfie in person for the first time. We're sitting in her little corner office, and in comes her assistant. She says, the family's here. And I'm like, The family. I thought the mom was coming, you know. She's like, oh, no, we didn't fit in the small conference room. We have to go in the big conference room. And
oh,
I was
wow.
scared to death. And I was like, well, good thing I brought my Bible, because I don't know what else to do or say. And I walked in this room with more people. We're all standing and crowded in this room, three generations of family, openly wailing and crying, missing Tim. And they, like, put me at the head of the conference table. And we're like, okay. And I was like, I just wanted to tell them I would gift them with a headstone.
Yes.
And I'm sitting with, like, ministering to this family. And I opened my Bible and I was like, well, let's get started. And I just read some scripture and prayed for them. And I just was like, Lord, 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 Lord. Like, what do I do? What do I do? I'm not a chaplain. I'm not a funeral home director. I'm not all these things. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing. And he said, just ask him about Tim. And I was like, of course, that makes so much sense. And I said, tell me about Tim. And we sat there for an hour, and I heard everyone's story of Tim.
Aww.
And I got to know Tim through them. And at the end, I was like, all of a sudden it occurred to me, oh yeah, they're waiting for me to tell them I'm going to give them this headstone. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, and yes, my ministry will of course do this for you. And then the second tier of wailing started, and the gratitude was overwhelming. And that just kicked off a long friendship with Addie Bray and her whole family. And it's just like the people I have met in this ministry have absolutely changed my life.
Yeah.
I meet them in the hardest situations and most fearful places of a parent. And the raw, vulnerable, honest place to bring my Bible and bring me and bring my prayers and just sit and listen to them is the greatest gift of all. And it's where I learned that Jesus only had himself. You know, think about it. He didn't have a checkbook.
Mm-mm.
He didn't have a program.
Yeah.
And what he brought every single time to every situation, no matter whether it was a child or an old man or a mom, he just showed up.
Yeah.
And he came and he listened and he gave himself. And the resource was him.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the check. He wasn't sending money off of all these places. And yes, yeah, sometimes he provided a meal, right?
Yeah.
And he took care of what their gut needed. But he fed them spiritual fruit, but he also fed them the emotional contact with him as a human. And that's where I've landed really with the purpose of my role with He Knows Your Name is to show up, say yes to God, show up, and then just wait and see what do these people need?
Yeah.
What do they, what are they asking of me? Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, like early on, someone said to me, be careful. You do a nice thing for somebody and they're going to come out of the woodwork and you're going to get really cynical and people are going to like take advantage of you. Mm-hmm. And in 15 years, I have never once felt that way.
Wow.
Never.
That's incredible. To me, I feel like the most precious asset that we have is our time. Mm-hmm. And you were giving such a special, you know, you had a family, you had kids that you need to take care of. You just lost your mom and here you find yourself and giving your most precious asset to people that you didn't even know.
Right.
What stood out about that story to me was that the news was sort of showing Tim to be this reckless boy and this whatever, you know, just and getting to know the family. You heard nothing but wonderful things about how wonderful he was.
Right.
Which to me, it talks about judgment. We're so quick to judge. Yeah. We're so quick to just point fingers. And what a great reminder that we don't know. Mm-hmm. And you got to know him by just investing your time and giving this family some, you know, eye-to-eye conversation. Right. That's what they needed. I bet that they needed that most than the headstone. You know, just like, hey, listen to our story. Just hear who Tim was.
Yes, that's and they are people that I would never otherwise meet.
Let alone
meet where I meet them. But, like, I look nothing like them. They look nothing like me. And when I had a funeral for Nicholas at 13 months later, his mother came and she too was demonized in the media. Mm-hmm. And it became another mission of mine to tell the redemptive story, right? And correct the injustice that had happened for 13 months in the media, because that was in the media a lot. And a lot of what I do is in the media. And so always putting mom in that story and saying, talk to this mom, let the public see who they demonized for 13 months. And Scott Swan from THR did a beautiful story on both Nicholas and Addie Bray. Oh. And he partnered with me in that joy of bringing redemption and the human element to the story, where these mothers are weeping on camera and they're human and they loved their kids.
Yeah.
And neither one of them were at fault, you know. And so all the stories I've always shared, like when I learned writing my book, even like those chapters, I thought, I'm not going to share a story yet in my book unless there's been a full circle moment.
Okay.
Well, because I don't believe God is really finished. And then I learned after my book was done, and now that's been 10 years since I wrote my book.
Oh,
I have
10
more years of He Knows Your Name. What I've learned is that redemption is a flower and it just keeps blooming and blooming and blooming. Yeah. And as it opens, you just see more of the inner pieces of it, right? And the colors change and it gets like that, the petals get deeper around the brim. And that is so God. He's never done with the redemption story.
Yeah.
And don't we know that with Easter morning that we just shared? Jesus didn't just raise from the dead once.
Yeah.
Right? He's alive and active. We know it from his word. Every time we get in his word and something else, another word pops off the page to us, the Holy Spirit's illuminating more and more and more. And that is all redemption. It's all the redemption of Christ's life. It's all redemption of the Holy Spirit's work in us and in others. And as he desires so to bring the kingdom from heaven to earth, he does it through us. I know that he's requiring of us that we go show justice and love, right? Mm-hmm. We show and tell story of redemption and we bring the light and we make those things that were wrong, right? And we go where it was dark and we make it light. And just walking out the gospel all the time is just my purpose to say, I desire so much to bring the kingdom through the gospel. Mm-hmm. And every story gives me that opportunity to do that.
Was there ever, like, amongst all the stories, I'm not done with the book yet, but was there ever a situation or a story that shook you to your core? Or was that Nicholas was the one that...
Honestly, every single one of them has done something deep, deep in me.
Yeah.
That has changed me forever. And it's not just the story of the death. It's the legacy on their lives. It's their family. It's that they've invited me in and trusted me. Dominique Allen died at 15 years old. She was murdered. You'll come to this story.
Yeah.
And that family, after they found her, and she, oh, it was the most brutal thing. And I can't, I somehow got connected to it. I can't remember how, but like now a lot of times a police officer will tell a family about me uh-huh. or a nurse at a hospital will say, call Linda, you know? And so I'll kind of get in with people that way.
Yeah.
But Dominique, they didn't have a suspect for 18 months. And this family was waiting for them to find the murderer of their daughter and their sister. And they finally did. And then they had to go to court and then it was delayed and it was this and it was that. So there were 20 press conferences over the course of that time frame. Wow. And this family forgave him and they waited well. And I got to be the fly on the wall in the inner circle with them in their homes as I listened to them process this nightmare of a situation. And then I got to bury her. And that's a whole other long story. But the beauty of that, because their mother had died before the daughter and she didn't have a headstone. And that kind of came out while we were waiting for Dominique and the criminal investigation. But it wasn't until her murderer was sentenced could they release her body.
Wow.
So they waited to bury her for a long time.
Yes.
And that, what the family had to endure in that. But I saw their tenacity. I saw how much they loved their sister. And they were just working and waiting on justice and waiting on God to just do what only he could do. They changed me. They are some of the most dear people to me. Even after the press conference and the sentencing and everything. And then they still say at the press conference, like, we forgive him, you know. And they meant it from the depths of their wow. soul. So I just get to be with people that have changed me. So it's yeah. not just the situation. But then when we buried Dominique, I had bought her mother a bronze headstone that had a special urn made in it. We had to have it specially made. And so she was buried with her mother.
Oh,
and that was their desire. And so to be so able special. To achieve that through the work of my many partners and mm-hmm. businesses that provide goods and services for me is like the partnership and network that's been established only through God has been something that humbles me beyond words, because I sit here, but there's an army of people behind me
sure.
who say yes. I can say yes to the first need, mm-hmm. but then I have to turn to everybody else and say, hey, cemetery partners, you know, funeral home partners, monument people, you know,
it on
and
on. Village.
It takes a lot of people. Yes. And God has formed a team around me. And do you know, they are all the very first people that I established and worked with since Nicholas.
Wow.
I have not had to like go find someone else to say yes to me. They are in this with me. They give their time and their resources and their mm-hmm. hearts for the work of He Knows Your Name. And I am honored to be on that team with them. That's they incredible. Have changed me for sure as well.
Yeah. I feel like when God gives us a mission, it's like we think that we are going to go and help people. But like you said, you've been changed through right. all of this that you have right. experienced. You've become a better human.
Right. Right. So your question of like, so there's those stories, which yes. were the foundational, like that's what like God just used to like carve into the dirt and soil. You know, mm-hmm. he tilled the soil for He Knows Your Name to be started. And then what has come out of it is like baby Amelia, who was found at Eagle Creek Park in December 28th, 2014. Mm-hmm. And I named her Amelia, which means defender. And when I asked God, what is she going to defend? And he told me the safe haven law. I thought, what do you mean? We already have that. No one knows about it. And that's probably why she was thrown away in the dirt.
Oh my gosh.
Her mom didn't know about it, even though there was a fire station 2 miles down the road. She didn't know about the law and safe surrender. But I was at that funeral and I'm standing over the grave of this casket I just placed down there. And I get a tap on my shoulder and it's Monica Kelsey. And she's like, that is the problem. I have the solution. And she was just working on the very beginning stages of the Safe Haven Baby Box.
Wow.
And that anonymous surrender option and enhancement to the Safe Haven law allowed me to go give testimony to the Senate and the House of Representatives on behalf of that new law. And I got to share Amelia's story in the Senate chamber and the House of Representatives chamber. That was amazing. I stood up there with my Bible as a citizen of this state mm-hmm. with all freedom to say all the things I wanted to say and prove that abandoned babies are real humans. Mm-hmm. They're not just a number. They're not just on a shelf at the coroner's office, unknown and unnamed. But she now has a name and she has a legacy. Do you know that she's been I just celebrated her 10-year finding.
Wow.
And we have not had a deceased baby found in the state of Indiana in 10 years because her legacy has been education of the Safe Haven Law. And the collaboration of my efforts with Monica Kelsey, she decided to put Amelia's footprint on her logo. And wow. So every mother who safely surrenders a baby has to walk up that sidewalk to the box and she sees that footprint. And it is my hope that she knows that a woman who chose to carry in the most desperate situation chose life and is choosing to like have her child safely surrendered. And now abandonment's criminal. She's choosing to follow the law, give this baby a future family, right? We know there's an adoptive family out here somewhere waiting to adopt a child. And this is an answered prayer. She's delivering into this box. And
so I just want to cut you for people who don't know what the Safe Haven box is. You're essentially describing it. So that was approved. So can you give us what is that?
It's literally a box, but it's climate controlled and it has inner alarms and everything. And it's put into fire stations.
Okay.
And so the babies are put in. Mom closes the door, cannot reopen it. She leaves in complete privacy. And all the babies have been safely surrendered in 90 seconds out of the box and given medical care. And then they're taken to an ER right away. And a foster family would take them and hold them until an adoptive family was found. Now, our foster care system in Indiana, you can check a box if you're in foster care that says, yes, I wanted a Safe Haven baby box baby to adopt. So now, all these years later, the babies are going right to their adoptive families.
Wow.
And those adoptive families can be in the hospital with those babies. And so those moms and dads get to be like in there with this newborn who most of those babies are put in their placenta umbilical cord and all.
Oh,
like they
gosh.
Have been freshly delivered.
Wow.
And so they get medical care right away. And I've met many of those families, many of those children, and they're thriving toddlers running around. Making all the noise, you know, doing all the things.
I love that. So there's no penalty for the mom.
No.
There's no, nobody knows. It's like completely anonymous.
Right.
Wow. How many babies have you guys? Do you know?
I think there's been 55 babies in boxes and over 150 safely surrendered in handoffs through the hotline. So the hotline is really important. And so hopefully in your show notes, you can put more of that information to the Safe Haven Baby Box. But that legacy of Amelia has meant everything to me. Her life has really mattered, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was an abandoned baby. And yet God knew exactly what the timing and everything needed to be for her to come and usher in a whole new time of opportunity for us to protect and promote life.
Yes.
And we lead the way in the state of Indiana. So I'm the only one in the country doing what I'm doing. And Monica's the only one in the country doing what she's doing. So what's happening in the state of Indiana as the first state that passed the law for the Safe Haven Baby Box. Now there are 15 states that have passed the law. There's 350 boxes now across the country.
Oh my gosh.
Hundreds of incredible. Them in Indiana. And we are leading the way for promoting and protecting life.
So all those 55 babies plus 150 would have been probably in dumpsters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are now safe and thriving because you said yes.
Yes. And so it's a full circle moment, right?
It
and
is.
It's so redemptive. But
so
it's like,
beautiful.
I know that it's my purpose to be Amelia's voice and I carry her legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever there's a box dedication or a baby or whatever, I'm there at the press conference and I'm sharing her story. And saying, this was what happened. This is now not happening.
Yeah.
And it's working. That's the other thing we're telling legislators everywhere. We don't have deceased babies in Indiana anymore, which is incredible.
I love
so that story has been magnificent for me, as well as then what happened in 2020 for us with the baby.
So tell
O'Reilly.
Us. Yes.
So in 2020, of course, now, you know, I'm years down the road with He Knows Your Name and I know a lot of people. I've been talking to a lot of different people. I know, you know, the Kirsch & Kirsch Adoption Agency, which is thriving in Indiana, all over the place. And I get a call from them and they said, we're at Riley Hospital. There's a baby here, critically ill. Baby was born at Methodist, but the baby was really, really critically ill, came to Riley. Mom signed adoption papers, is gone. Homeless mom who is addicted.
Oh.
Baby is in critical condition, is suffering, and is not going to survive. the her brain MRI was described to me as being the worst MRI these physicians at Riley had ever seen.
Wow.
And so it was devastating. And I, you know, I went there, I ran there because they had gotten all the heads of the departments around the conference table. And I walked in and I sat down and I was like, I don't understand why I'm here. What do you guys need? Mm-hmm. Clearly, you know, the writing's on the wall. This perfect baby that looks perfect on the outside is completely destroyed on the inside.
Yeah.
And they said, she's 7 days old and she's suffering and we don't have a guardian for her. Would you be her guardian? And I was like, I don't know what you mean. And they said, we need someone legally mm-hmm. to become her guardian and then take her off life support. I mean, I was sitting there like, I just start crying and I was like, mm-hmm. you're asking me to take this child off life support in like a moment. Like mm-hmm. I have to decide now. It's Friday at 2 o'clock and a judge to sign this guardian paperwork by 4 so that we can get through, because it's the weekend now. Mm-hmm. And then like this poor little baby is suffering. And they don't know what they're going to do. And I was like, so I heard, I said, everyone has to tell me what every single examination, every test you've done, every x-ray, every MRI, everything, tell me everything. I need intellectually to mm-hmm. understand what it is you're telling me because emotionally I'm losing it here.
Yeah.
And they did. And I was like, praying. And I thought, yes, she needs to go to Jesus
mm-hmm.
and be relieved from her pain. And I said, I need to go see her. And so I went into the NICU and I looked on the glass door as I was walking in and it said BUFA, B-U-F-A on the door. And it just stopped me. And I mean, there's lots of stuff on the windows and all kinds of stuff, but I was like, what does that mean? And they said, baby up for adoption. And the adoption attorney had called people from all over the country all week long because, you know, there are gracious people out there who will take sick babies mm-hmm. and adopt them or care for them in end of life. But this was happening very quickly and no one had called.
Oh.
They said, no one's answered the call. And I was like, there we go again. You know, God, I hear you. And I walked in and I saw this beautiful baby. And I said, oh my gosh, she was born from a C-section, wasn't she? Because her head was just perfect, round baby head. And they said, yes, how did you know? And
I'm not like, a cone.
Yeah. I said, well, I've had a couple babies, so I know, you know. And I said, oh, I have to hold her. And they took her off some wires, you know, and I held her and I said, I'll be back tomorrow. And then I called my husband. And anyway, we ended up going back that night because Steve had not met her. And we sat with her again that night. And then we went back in the morning. And when I went back in the morning, I brought a beautiful white gown. And I brought some oil to anoint her. And we brought a speaker to play worship music all day with her. And we didn't know how long we were going to be with her.
Yeah.
And we were with her all day. And we held her. And Steve read scripture over her. And we claimed identity over her and named her Abigail, which means a father's joy. And I said to the nurses, you know, we're not calling her Bufa anymore. Her name is Abigail. And the nurses were tender and beautiful. And they taught me so much. They just kept showing me and teaching me all the stages of everything, of detaching her from this world and every medical thing. And they dressed her in a darling little onesie when I got there. But then when I got there, I put her in this beautiful crocheted white gown. And we baptized her and anointed her with oil and sang over her and just held her the entire time and spoke life over her, mm-hmm. you know, and just worshiped over her and told her who she was. And it was incredible. And it was the most sacred thing. And the doctors just kept coming in and they were like, who are you?
Yeah.
Why are you here? And it was like, it was like there was a revolving door. At the door, because it just, people kept coming in. It'd be like your door was open in your neighborhood and your neighbors just kind of kept popping in. And people kept popping in all day and they were like, who are you? Why are you here? Like, we've heard what you're doing. This is incredible. And we just gave testimony after testimony and shared the gospel and the love of God with everyone. And we were like, you can't say no. Like, I can't say no to this. Like, yes, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. Little did I know what else I would do in my life. And so I just held her all day and then it was time. We took her off her life support and they said, okay, just to prepare you, she's going to go really fast.
Oh.
There's just nothing there. And they took her off and she lasted 2 more hours. And everyone kept saying, she doesn't want to leave.
Oh,
it was like, we were in this sanctuary of her hospital room, you know? And it was like, of course, she's so close to heaven. And then she took her last breath in my arms. And so it was just amazing. And I, just being so connected to media and talking to the people I talked to in my life, like Nicole Pence from Pence Media, I called and consulted with her and I was like, you know, what do I do with this story? And she's like, you've got to talk to Holly Hayes at the Star. And so I called Holly and I was like, Holly, you know, there's a testimony here of redemption. This child was lost and then found. And she was in the dark place named Bufa, you know, and now she has a name. And we're planning her funeral all week, you know, and Holly came to me like that next morning and was like, we want to do a story. Can we follow you all week long? And they did. They followed me to the cemetery and to the offices and everywhere I went planning her funeral. And then they came to the funeral and then they put her funeral picture on the cover of the Star. Wow. And the procession was as far as I could see in the cemetery. And I mean, we just kept saying like, God what is illuminated happening? Her life.
Yes.
And this stranger with no name is now known by everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now still to this day, I have people come up to me and say, you're Abigail's mom, right?
Wow.
And I'm just like,
wow.
I'm honored beyond words that you call me that. Like, I got to be her mom. And then months later, Kirsch called me and he said, you know, you want to adopt her? And I was like, well, I feel like I already did, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, no, not just guardian, not legal guardian, but like adopt her. Where her birth and death certificate say Abigail Zanocco. And I was like, oh my gosh. Yes. Like we were her parents.
Yes.
And in life and in death. And Steve and I were like, no brainer, yes. And so we went through this now gets an so the other miracle was she was born right before COVID.
Oh,
we were
gosh.
In and out of that hospital completely freely. Weeks later, COVID hits.
Everything
I don't
shut
know
down.
What would have happened to that baby.
Wow.
And so my Zoom call for adoption was on Zoom because of COVID.
Yes.
And so we had our whole, lots of people, some family, like all on that Zoom call with the judge. And he was like, what did you do? And why did you do this?
Yes.
You know? And I was like, I dare you to say no to this. You know, who can say no to this? And so we became her legal parents and her birth certificate and death certificate says it's Abigail. And then my children gave her middle name. I had my adult children choose Elise,
oh.
which means beloved. And then Zanocco. And then we buried her at Washington Parkey Cemetery, which is where most of the babies I've claimed in 15 years are buried.
Okay.
And now there's like 55 babies there. And
that's insane.
It's insane. And there's just rows and rows and rows in baby land of these headstones that say, he knows your name. Ugh. And the baby's names, of course. So now if the babies were born with, okay, all the babies born in hospitals that have mm-hmm. been left unclaimed have their mother's last name.
Okay.
Because they are on their mother's medical record legally. I've never changed a name.
Okay.
If a mother has given a name, first name even, I do not change it.
Mm-hmm.
If there is no name for a baby that's been left at a funeral home, the coroner's office, or a hospital, I give them a name.
Okay.
But if they all have last names and I keep their last names. So I always pray that a family will come back mm-hmm. and wonder where they are. And everywhere I've claimed a baby from, they have the record of where that baby's buried. So that's the last trail that the family knows about, and then they can finish finding their baby.
Okay.
And I know people, I know mothers have gone to the grave.
Oh,
that's a whole other story. So, and that's in my book, which you'll read at the end.
Okay.
So Abigail was buried at Washington Park East Cemetery. And over the years, as I've claimed more and more babies and had funerals for 5 babies at a time or 3 babies at a time, like all these headstones are there. And she now is among all of them. Well, my daughter, Anna, 18 years ago, started battling an eating disorder. So we have been on this journey fighting for Anna's life all these years. And she has been on a roller coaster ride in treatment, out of treatment, in treatment, out of treatment. We have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on treatment to save her life. And life was our goal. Like, save her life, save her life, save her life.
Mm-hmm.
The manifestations of the eating disorder got worse and worse and worse in her. And the length of time of her starving her body and her brain and all her organs got worse and worse. And even though she put on a really good face, no one faked it better than Anna. Mm-hmm. And no one overcompensated better than Anna. But we knew that this was just like not going away.
Yeah.
And there were no answers in the medical field. There was a physician at the psych ward at Methodist that told me that in 30 years, they know no more today than they did 30 years ago.
Oh my
as long
gosh.
As he's practiced. And that is what we were finding. We were just finding like hit the wall here, hit the wall there, no answers here, no answers there. But recovery centers inpatient are run by private institutions
mm-hmm.
and they don't keep a lot of records. I mean, they get them in, they get them out.
Mm-hmm.
And Anna went in and went out. And so you could call that a success for them, I guess.
Yeah.
But then she'd go to residential and then she'd come home and then she'd be okay and then she wouldn't be okay. And it was just always this rhythm. She just was getting really bad again. And last spring, she just said, Mom, there is no more treatment for me.
Oh.
But I really want to try. I want to live and I want to try this on my own, but no more treatment. And, you know, we were like, we want to support you. And if you're telling us you can do this on your own, we want to believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ventured in to the spring with that, with her, and, things were getting harder for her. And, she decided on enlisting herself in hospice. That support from hospice was really encouraging to her.
Mm-hmm.
And when my dad was battling congestive heart failure, he was in hospice 3 times and retired 3 times from hospice.
Wow.
And she said, I'm going to be like Papa. I'm going to go in there and get all the support I need, but I want to stay home. I can't go away again.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work. I don't want to tear myself away from my life. I love my work. I love my friends and my cats and my home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she was choosing quality of life.
Sure.
And I thought, you know, we were like, well, if she was a cancer patient who said, I can't, like, there's no more treatment, right?
Yeah.
There's no more chemo. There's no more surgeries. That's really where she was.
Yes.
And she said, I'm going to just do this myself. And as the spring wore on and she was in hospice, it was just evident that that support was actually right exactly what she needed. And so Anna was in hospice for 4 months last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then she died of her eating disorder on August 21st.
I'm so sorry.
And she too died in my arms. And I'm not the same. Like, that has been the most gut-wrenching thing ever. I know I'm living like every parent's worst fear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the story I wanted. You know, it's not what I prayed for.
Yeah.
God didn't answer my prayers. I prayed for 18 years that she would survive and she would be delivered from the enemy
mm-hmm.
and the torture and the hideous disease of that eating disorder and how it tormented her mind and ravaged her body. And that's not what happened. But God, he did show up and he was with us like never before. His presence was as real as ever. And he gave us other miracles.
Mm-hmm.
And we were with him and he was with us and he was with Anna all summer. Everyone said she was going to pass a certain way because her body was in such bad shape. And she, almost like Abigail, hung on. And we were with her the whole day, her final day, and she was at complete peace.
Wow.
And God restored relationships all summer long. He redeemed her life in so many ways. She was at such peace. I mean, the anxiety was just calming in her. And there was reconciliation with people that things had gotten really hard with
mm-hmm.
over the years in our family because it was hard living with this.
Oh, I'm sure.
And there's nothing the enemy wants to do more than kill, steal, and destroy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've lived with for 18 years. And, you know, I, as a mom, have battled like, yeah, that kind of seems like what happened. And then God shows up and shows me it's not. Like, death was not the end. Jesus went for the one. And he many times left the 99
yes.
to go for her and claim her and rescue her. And he did even on her deathbed. And I don't know how people live without faith.
Yeah.
I have no idea. because God's word is true. His promises actually have been fulfilled. And this Easter, like I was baptized on Easter and I found my faith on near Easter when I was 26 years old. So Easter has always been so special to me. This Easter Sunday, just the other day, was the most remarkable experience of my life spiritually. And I was like, yes, victory over the grave. He lives, he's alive, and he promises us the same thing. And there are some intimate details I'm not going to share that I know that Anna's faith in Jesus was completely realized. And Jesus was a man of sorrows, and he sits with those in sorrow. And he sat with us that entire time. And he is actually enough. His grace is really sufficient. And his promises really are true. And he really is alive.
Yes.
And I've never been more sure of it in my entire life than sitting here today. Wow. And here we are 8 months since Anna's death. And it is brutal. Grief is hard. And I can say, like, I got out of bed this morning. I'm still breathing, right? I'm sharing testimony, just like I did in my book. I wrote that book because God gave me Revelation 19:10, which says, worship God, for this, the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. And I saw that happen in all those years of He Knows Your Name. I saw him carry mothers who stood at the grave. I saw people who said, I don't believe anymore. I'm throwing my faith in the grave.
Yeah.
And I'm burying it and I'm never believing again. And I've watched them live in torment and misery. And I'm like, that's not the way to go.
Yeah.
Then I've seen mothers throw themselves in the grave with their children. It's horrible.
Yeah.
But they're now like walking zombies. And over the years, it's like God just used all of that to show me and teach me, I have more for you.
Yeah.
And the purpose and plans he has on my life and everyone's life, for me as a wife and a mother of more than one child, and now the grandmother to five.
Wow.
I have generations to live for. And I need to still fulfill the plans and purposes of God on my life and carry. Like I've always said, I carry joy here and sorrow here. And I'm every morning, they confront me big time.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to get out of bed and be like, is this really my life? And then I remember it all. Like I just doing the practice, what Jesus said, remember me, remember everything. Remember everything you know about me, all my names. Remember everywhere I've shown up. And I'm like, okay, the joy and the sorrow, you are in both places.
Yes.
He knows it very well. He too carries them all. And the Lord told me one morning, now get up, put them both in your pocket and carry them with you because they both make you who you are. And so I know that grief, the hope of grief, I think from God's perspective is that it transforms us more into his likeness and more being more compassionate people, more understanding, more empathetic, and more the warriors God wants us to be, and more like carrying the, I don't believe Satan's behind every bush. That's not ever my temperament, but I do know he hates us and I do know he is alive and well.
Yeah.
And until Jesus comes back, we are fighting a real enemy. And I've seen it in full bloom in my life and in my daughter. And yet God. And God won. I can say God won. And in my sadness and in my grief, I can still say that and mean it with all my heart and say my marriage is thriving by the grace of God. I know that statistic, you know, I've seen it in other families and I've sworn that's not going to be me. And I have other children who are living full lives.
Yes.
My son is the pastor of my church.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I'm like, there's a whole body of believers that have warred for us. And I'm like, I want to be like stronger for that. And I want to always give testimony to the goodness of God in the land of the living. That's what the psalm says, you know? And so I do that. And just knowing like God knew us when he laid the foundations of the earth. And when he created You know, Genesis 1, he created it all and knows it all. Nothing about me and my life and my family is a surprise to him. Yeah. It's shocked the heck out of me most days. Sure. But I can like get my bearings and know that God is in control. Mm-hmm. And that is not just like, I say that because I'm wearing the bracelet. God's in control. You know what I mean? Yes. I mean like, no. When you've tasted the goodness of God in the land of the living, mm-hmm. like I don't want anything else. I agree. I mean, some days I feel like I'm just surviving. Trust me. It's not all glory.
Sure.
And but that's, I am that's surviving. What's important. You know, I'm surviving. And I do believe that the journey of grief is my new life. Mm-hmm. And I have just slowly gotten back into my work as there's been needs, and there have been needs, and the Lord has supplied me with what I need for that, you know? Wow. And like I said, the reason I said yes to this podcast was because I believe if I live my life worshiping God, like mm-hmm. Revelation 19 says, and I spend time with him and I worship him and I give him the glory for everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly,
yeah,
and say, that's for you. That's on you, God. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to sort all this out, but you go be God. I am not him, clearly. Yeah. But I do know that he is all sufficient and all powerful, and he is picking me up every day, and he's mending me, you know, and it's slow, but it's okay. And I'm just really thankful for what he has shown me and allowed me to do and partner with him in, because everything in life we're doing with him.
Yes. I know you've talked about and described how you're feeling and how difficult it is, yet you are getting up in the morning. Do you have any resources that maybe you can offer or words of wisdom to moms who have lost their babies and are grieving and cannot get out of that grieving cycle?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know,
I think being honest with yourself, asking for help. Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, losing a child is the biggest fear of everyone. And people are frozen watching us. And they take a step back because they're living in their own fear. Because there's a lot of moms out there, I'll speak personally, with kids with addiction, mm-hmm. in recovery for whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Or that have had suicidal tendencies from time to time in their life. Or they're practicing cutting. Or there's a substance issue you're kind of worried about. You don't like the kids they're hanging around with. And you feel it. You're there. No. You're in worry. And I'm like, you know, I have practiced for 18 years turning my worry into worship when it makes no sense. And it, you know what it does? It lifts me a little higher. Mm. And that's where I'm like, I'm drowning here. You know, so I say like, get into a local church. Mm. Let a community wrap their loving arms around you.
Yeah.
And let people know what you need, whether it's your family or if it's not your family, let it be some friends. But you have to share what you're going through so people know what you need. And that's really where it starts. And it's being humble enough yourself and laying down your own pride and fears and saying like, nope, I need help. And I think finding a chaplain maybe in an organization that's doing some work that is like wrapped around care for whatever it is your special thing is. There are amazing people in amazing places all over this city and state with organizations, nonprofits, and even secular that are giving of themselves in resource. And so I would say getting counseling. Mm-hmm. I've been in all different kinds of counseling over the years. The hospice group we were with, which I highly recommend, if you need hospice, then get in it. I mean, I know a lot of people are freaked out about hospice, but like when if you're really to that point, and I was familiar with it because my brother died of cancer when he was 34. Wow. And then both my mom and dad were in hospice. I was familiar with it, that it didn't scare me. Like I knew where we were, mm-hmm. right? Like that's a hard reality, but like letting them come into our space and get intimate with us and give us the support we needed in that really, really hard time. And just like laying down all the inhibitions and being honest was like the greatest gift that we gave ourselves. And then that company offered 13 months of free counseling afterwards.
Wow.
As a lot of them do. And so there's free counseling in a lot of different places. Mm-hmm. Call your church. There's just different places. E91 right here in Indianapolis offers. They have a wonderful counseling center. Mm-hmm. And just get what you need.
Yeah.
You know, I right now, when I lost my brother, it was my brother. He was my peer. That was really hard. But my kids were really little. They didn't really go through that with me. And then losing my mom and dad, they were losing their grandparents, but I was losing my mom and dad. So the grief was different. Mm-hmm. So we needed different things. And then now I've got, so now my children have lost their sibling, which I did once, right? Yes. And so I know how I felt in that journey. And so I've tried to encourage them and the people around them to love on them mm-hmm. in a way that I felt like there was a miss for me.
Yeah.
And realizing like right now, because it's my daughter, Anna, like it's my immediate family. We're all swimming in this pool of grief.
Yeah.
We're all like in the deep end and mm-hmm. we're all like doggy paddling, trying to catch our breath. And we all are kind of responsible. They're all adults now, but mm-hmm. they're responsible for their own grief
sure.
and their own journey of grief. They're all in different places, which all make perfect sense, but they're not where I am. And so I can't mandate, oh, yeah. go do this or go do that. Or it, just because this works for me, it should work for you. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. So all I can do is encourage them to get the support they do need.
Yeah.
And even some of Anna's closest friends and her boyfriend and some people, like everyone kind of needs to do it their way. And that is yeah. just the way of grief. But grief was upon us all summer. It wasn't just after Anna died. Mm-hmm. And so getting grief support for the anticipated loss.
Sure.
But I was already living years and years in shattered dreams, knowing certain things would never be.
Yeah.
And that was already ripping at my heart and gutting me as a mom. And so I've tended to that all along the way. I've just started back in counseling after kind of doing the grief work with like the hospice team and then taking some time off of that. And now I just feel like I'm in a different place for some reasons. And so I'm really humbled to say I'm thankful I have found a wonderful woman to meet with and just go do my own work. Mm-hmm. I have to do my own work. Steve and I are both grieving, but we're grieving differently, mm-hmm. which of course we are. And there's so much we're sharing, but there's also a time where I need to go over here and he needs to go over there.
Yes.
And we both are doing that. And so I just say, take care of yourself. This is not going to go away. It's going to change you, mom. Mm-hmm. And if you have other children, you've got to live and survive and be great for them.
Yes.
And if you're in a marriage, protect it with your life. It doesn't do anybody any good to let that deteriorate. And then you each go broken people, your own yeah. separate ways, and take that into other families.
Exactly.
Do your
try
work.
To find someone who you know, to fix it. It's just not going
no,
to. Yes.
No. We have done a lot of work as a family. And I can say like, I don't mean to say like, oh, I embrace it. Mm-hmm. But I kind of have no choice. And so I am where I am. This is my story. This is my song.
Yeah.
And I have to steward what God has done in our lives. And I have to also steward who he made me to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not willing to die with Anna
yeah.
in on earth. I'm yeah. not willing to do that.
You have a purpose.
I
do.
A purpose. And I think that's the other part of this is to say to women, like, you know, exercise your spiritual muscles, like say yes to the little things so that when the big things come, you're strong enough and you're confident enough to say yes to God. Because when it makes no sense and he's challenging you or inviting you into something, you know, where would I be without my work? Mm-hmm. It has just been the most fulfilling outside of motherhood and being a wife and having my family. It has stirred things in me, woken up things in me as a wife and a human. I didn't know God was preparing me for this all these years,
yeah.
you know? And so he was doing a work in me. I had no idea he was doing. Mm-hmm. And I love what I'm doing. I love the people I work with and get to do life with. And the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that I've bumped into along the way in 15 years that have brought me so much life and taught me so much and made me a better person. Mm-hmm. I am better because I know their stories.
Yeah.
And so I am really just so thankful for all of that. And I want women to live and be the full woman that God wants them to be and asks for them to be mm-hmm. because there's so many layers to all of us as women. And he has more for us than just sadness,
yes.
you know? And I will always be sad. I know that. But it doesn't scare me. I mm-hmm. don't fear walking this out in my life or think I'm going to ever get over it. That is a joke. It will never happen.
Yeah.
And I believe I'll grieve Anna my whole life. And I have to tend to that. Yeah. So the eating disorder battle is really complicated. Every single person I've talked to in 18 years mm-hmm. says that. Mm-hmm. It's complicated. It's really devious. And it's mind, body, and soul mm-hmm. for the victim and for the family that's watching this happen. And it's hard to carry hope, but it's all you want to do, right? And so you have to have people around you or go for help or treatment somewhere where people carry hope with you. Mm-hmm. I battled with Anna first being a minor when mm-hmm. she had her eating disorder. And we were kind of like the spearheads of her treatment and involved sure. with all the people helping her and all of that. And then when she turned 18, everyone cut us off. And that was very unfortunate because when she was an adult and then she has all these treatment people and mm-hmm. they don't want to talk to us. And even if Anna invited them in, they were still so turned off by inviting family in
wow.
to let this be the family journey. And I was like, there's so much we know about yeah. our daughter that you actually need to know to treat her well
yeah.
and help her recover. And you're not tapping the greatest resource you have. And so treatment, I would say if there are parents who have questions, start talking to your physician, but like you're going to need a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Get second and third and fifth and 10th opinions because no one has answers for this. Mm-hmm. And there is no one way to get past this. And it's a journey.
Yeah.
And it's a sad, hard one. And I know that I'm not the poster child. Anna's mm-hmm. not the poster child for like, obviously for recovery. But she did have moments of recovery. She had moments where she did better and then sank again. But, you know, an eating disorder is the number one fatality with women in mental, oh with my mental gosh, illness.
That is insane.
And no one knows
I never
it.
Knew this.
I mean,
no,
I'm telling you, no one knows this. Yeah. And so education and awareness is so important that I would say to people, honestly, if you really, really, really need a resource, send me an email. Mm-hmm. And I can send you some different things because I am now still learning of sure. some really different resources that we were not aware of. There's a doctor in Denver doing some incredible work okay. and she has an entirely different method than anything else we were offered all over the years. But this is a very evolving disease and there's not enough research at all. Yeah. And the research dollars is, you know, we just did there was an article by Erica Anderson just done in the Wall Street Journal. About eating disorders and her research right now shows like it's pittance how much money they're spending on eating disorder research compared to all these other things when it is like it is such a struggle and the demographic has really changed in 15 years from being like the wealthy white girl's disease 15 years ago to now everywhere. It is in every single age bracket, demographic, race and gender
wow.
dysphoria. All the way through everything, it's everywhere. And so I'm like, we have got to step up. Not we, but like the research and sure. medical profession has got to address this. And mm-hmm. I would say like, you're going to have to knock on a lot of doors. And so you've got to be persistent. Don't be satisfied with one or two answers. Mm-hmm. Get outside of your city if you have to. Get outside of your state if you have to and go find help.
Yes.
Go find help. And it's really hard and it can be really discouraging. And unfortunately, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah. I very well know yeah. this. I was fortunate with my daughter. She didn't have an eating disorder, but she did have addiction and she was a minor too. And I felt so, in this case, God answered the biggest prayer of my life because as you said, it is a parent's biggest fear is to lose a child
yeah.
and not knowing. I had so many fears, besides losing her was just what would happen to her if I never saw her again, if she would jump in a car and then,
right.
you know,
right.
run away. Or I don't know. So many fears
totally.
As I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
And yes, I, after all that's said and done, this is my yes to God.
Yes.
But I also feel that there's so much more than I could and probably should be doing. And one of them is like, we don't have any resources here in Indiana for teens that are struggling with, that are Christian-based. I think that to me, that was a very important thing.
Yes,
we didn't
too.
Find anything.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing. And everything that was decent costed an arm and a leg.
Right.
And
right.
it's just like, and it wasn't even good.
No, I know. I know.
So it's just like,
it's really,
it just feels so hopeless. Yes. It feels very discouraging, but God has a plan.
Yeah.
And even though your prayer wasn't answered, it was in it his was. Way.
Right, right.
It was just not, it was not what you wanted. And right. I feel the same way. My prayers were, this is what I want, but your will be done. I always finished with this because yes. he knows best.
Yes,
he does. And there's a purpose for everything, yeah. even though we don't understand mm-hmm. and we are struggling here. I fully believe in that. And so I love that you're still yeah. working on your, and you accept that and you're getting up from bed,
yeah.
even though you want to stay in.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
Let this be a message for people struggling with whatever it is
right.
to get up from bed. There's yes. a purpose. You were created for something, and yeah. God wants you to fulfill that.
Right. And he wants to take your test and trial and turn it into a testimony. And
yes.
he wants you to share it to encourage other people. And, you know, the way God weaves things is, you know, you don't always see it until you look back. And I look back on Abigail mm-hmm. and bring her back into the story for a second and say, so she was buried at Washington Park East Cemetery. And then Anna was in hospice, and we were going through the summer, and we were like, okay, one of my other daughters asked us to start doing funeral preparations. And, you know, I was like, are you kidding me? And she's like, no, please do us a favor and start doing some prep for yourselves. And wow. like, while you do it for Anna, do it for yourselves. And so Steve and I did, we chose our own cemetery, and then we chose a plot, a family plot. And I mean, that's as far as we got for planning our own funeral.
Yes.
But I mean,
yes.
But it was like, okay, we have to decide where Anna's going to go and establish a plot and, you know, design a monument and like really get that going. And so we kind of started working on that. So of course it was on my mind, and the Lord woke me up in the middle of the night, and he said, I want you to move Abigail. And I was like,
oh,
what? Like disinter her from Washington Park East Cemetery. And he said, Anna needs her sister near her.
Oh.
And I all of a sudden had the vision that Anna wasn't going to be buried alone. And she had said to me, I don't want to die alone. And of course, I was like, oh, Abigail can be buried, and then Anna will be placed near her.
Mm-hmm.
And the comfort of that for us was so,
wow.
I could have never imagined that. I didn't even know anyone that ever did that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was a thing, even in the work I do. And so we did. We had Abigail moved and brought over to our cemetery. And she was reburied, and they wow. moved her headstone. And so she's was there like waiting for Anna, and Anna is now next to her. No. And it is so, I don't know. I don't even, the mystery of it all is like, it's so hard. It's a beautiful, terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, God, you gave vision for me that I could never have imagined would bless me. Yeah. Both my Zanaco girls are there, and, the beauty from Ashes, even in that story, that they are together and that God gave me the vision he had for that, has brought new meaning to the grave for me all over again.
Okay.
And of course, they are not there. I know for sure they're in heaven with the Lord. And I know that for a lot of reasons, not just because his word tells me, but I know it. I know it.
Yeah.
And I go there, but I see their names written in the dirt. And that has always been such a, he knows your name thing for me.
Yeah.
The Lord has just always, like, I have placed headstones in probably 10 other states. When people ask for a headstone for their child, because they see all my celebration of headstones, and like, oh, my baby doesn't have a headstone, and I always wanted one, or my mom wanted one. My daughter's been gone 40 years, and she still doesn't have a headstone.
Wow.
So providing headstones for people in other places has been really important for me, because I now even myself see, like, seeing their names written in the dirt gives a permanence and an eternity to our presence here on this earth.
Mm.
And, you know, like, we're not forgetting, you
yeah.
know, we're not forgetting you. And that is one way to not forget, and to just say, like, no, I'm here, and I was here, and I lived here, and I died here. And, you know, Abigail, even in her little life, she still does have a dash. A lot of babies I bury have no dashes.
Mm.
They're born and they die on the same day. And so it's one date.
Wow.
Amelia is a finding day. It's not, I don't know that she was actually born that day.
Yeah.
So I have found on the day she was found, December 14th, 2019. 2014, December 28th, 2014. And so, you know, every headstone tells a story.
Yes.
And Anna's will be placed in May, and it tells a story too. And it's not the way I want to tell story, right? Mm-hmm. But I will tell it.
So the mission of He Knows Your Name is to provide, can you tell us what the overall mission, I know we've talked about it, mm-hmm. but like to a summary of yeah. what He Knows Your Name does.
So He Knows Your Name, the mission I would say that God has given me for vision over it is that every child in life deserves a name and honor in death. And I know that sounds broad, but it is broad. Because I do that in hundreds of different ways. And whatever is meaningful for a family to mm. memorialize their child. And some families, their babies, maybe they delivered at a time in the 90s when they didn't even have any choices for burial. They didn't have a choice to even take their baby home and or to a funeral home for cremation. And
wow.
No, like babies were just taken. And they're considered medical waste. Or, I mean, there's so many people for decades and decades that have been just brutalized over the system, you know? And so for me, rewriting the narrative over dignity and honor over life, starting from conception on, especially at birth, whatever that birth that is. Mm-hmm. But in the state of Indiana, our law says that 20 plus weeks gestation or more when a baby dies, that baby has to be transported to a funeral home and given honor and basically honor and dignity and death. Now, not that all families are doing that. Clearly yeah. they're not. But that is where I come in and I see the need there. And I'm like, if I know about it, I do it. Mm-hmm. But if I have I have hundreds of thousands of over the years of mothers write me and say, I never named my baby. They didn't give me a chance to. I wish I would have named a baby. And I'm like, I work with them and say, let's give your child a name, even if only you and I know it.
Yeah.
You are fulfilling a deep desire in your mother's heart, and this will help heal that wound in you. And then saying, like, how do you want to memorialize your child? And they say, well, there's no opportunity to because I can't bury them and have a headstone. And so God just has really, like, gifted me with a real creative spirit over how we can memorialize life. I mean, just one of the simple, most frequent ways I do it is with a charm necklace where mm-hmm. I put the baby's name on a charm and the date on the back and a birthstone bead or something on it. And I have a jeweler who now does this for me, doesn't even charge me. She makes every charm. I mean, she's made hundreds and hundreds of them.
Wow.
And I tell these moms, like, wear this charm close to your heart like I am mine that says Anna. Mm-hmm. And you'll pass and see the reflection in a window or just see it in the mirror, you know, it'll just always be there and you'll remember. And that feels satisfying. Or I'm places and people say, who's Anna? And I get to tell them about Anna. And that's what they get to do. And I said, you don't even have to, instead of the baby's death, especially for moms I serve, like being an event, I had a miscarriage. I had a stillbirth birth. I had, it was this or was that. I even had an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move away from the wound of the event and the traumatic name and say, no, I'm going to give the baby a name.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to remember the child through the story of what was going on in my life at the time.
Mm.
What was special to you at the time? Like one woman said, well, I don't even live in the state where I had that baby. And so I said, well, what do you want to do? And we ended up landing on, she wanted a charm with the baby's name, but she also wanted a charm that was like an outline of the state where that baby was born. And so on that charm necklace for her, she has the state. She just, because she's like, I lived in that state a while and a lot happened there. And mm-hmm. I just want to remember, it fulfills this a little bit of the story.
Sure, yeah.
And so she's living more in the story instead of the event.
Okay.
And that is very healing for a lot of moms. And so I would just say to people, you don't even need me to do that. You know, mm-hmm. you can still name your baby, abortive, stillborn loss, miscarriage loss. You can go to a place that's special to you and mark that with something. Mm-hmm. You can have a little stone etched in all kinds of, there's this, you know, all kinds of stone centers or places all over the internet now
yeah.
where you can have them put anything you want on it. Have a garden stone made, which yeah. we did for Abigail and Anna. My husband loves our gardens.
Yeah.
And so we at first had Abigail's garden on it. And that is in a garden with a statue that I gave Steve for, meaning Abigail. And he curated this whole garden. And then when Anna was passing, I took the stone back over to the monument company and I said, please add Anna and.
Oh.
So now it says Anna and Abigail's garden. And it's right in our front and he curates it. We put flowers there. And it's just kind of like that thing we get to see when we sit on the rockers on our front porch yeah. and let the dog out that we get to see and it blesses us. And I don't know that anyone else really knows it's there or sees it. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It means something to us. And to have something at home, you know, to have things out in my house that remind me. And don't be afraid to remember.
Mm.
That's what I want to say to moms. It's okay to remember. I know that if it was an abortion or in a miscarriage or a stillbirth, it's loss and it's wounds, right? But there, I just believe, and I see this all the time, that there's always something about it that is a sweet memory.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you name them.
Yeah.
And it's a meaningful name. Then you can have an endearing moment over that memory. And I'm telling you, it happens all the time. And then it comes to them, and they often know. I don't have to come up with a lot of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I try to prompt them with thoughts or ideas.
Yeah.
But oftentimes they're like, I know, it's this, you know. And then yeah. it's their thing. And I just think engaging more in the journey of the loss and rewriting the narrative of it is always really helpful.
I love that. How does the business itself work for people mm-hmm. out there watching this and wanting to get involved, or like, how can I help this mm-hmm. organization? How can they do that?
Yeah. Really, the most important thing to me is what we started with at the very beginning, and that was giving your time and giving yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I often find the most meaningful way for people to do that is to come to my funerals. Because these are funerals I'm having where no family comes.
Yeah.
These babies have no one else there. And so my friends and community come, and people that are very dedicated to He Knows Your Name, but that is their volunteer effort. They come and they sit through the funeral and they watch this baby be buried and they lay flowers. The other thing I have is called an adopt-a-grave. And through He Knows Your Name, we have people annually adopt a grave. I mean, maybe it's on that baby's birthday or death day or whatever. But a lot of times people choose a day that's meaningful for them, where they had a loss, or maybe it's their grandmother's birthday or someone dear to them. And so they choose that day, and then they come to He Knows Your Name Babyland area,
mm-hmm.
and they lay flowers for that baby and decorate that grave. And then they send me pictures. And when I post those, I'm telling you, there's like hundreds and hundreds of people love seeing that. And we keep the baby's name alive by yeah. acknowledging them, visiting them, and marking their graves with beautiful things and fun things. When I had a funeral a month ago for 5 babies, wow. the groundsman, his name was David, and his mom heard the whole story of what he did that day. He took 5 caskets from me and set them in the grave.
Wow.
And she was so touched that she reached out to me and she said, I want to adopt all 5 babies. And you cannot believe, she went out there and did, so all 5 of their temporary markers are there because their mm-hmm. permanent headstones aren't down yet. And she did the whole thing in Easter. And it's this beautiful, huge Easter thing. And
oh.
she is just like, I'm going to do this all year long, every single holiday. I am like, I'm their person. And like the way people are showing up and giving, mm-hmm. that's how I want them to donate themselves, is by
how do coming, they know? Showing... How do we know when the funerals are?
So I always have an event on my He Knows Your Name page. You've got to follow me.
Okay.
And
on Instagram or?
On Instagram and Facebook.
Okay.
And also I have a newsletter.
Okay.
And my newsletter holds everything in it for like what happened, what is happening, and what's going to happen.
Mm.
So if you get my newsletter once a month, you will know the events and where Linda is.
Kind okay.
of where's Waldo? Where's Linda that? You know, like,
yes.
where was Linda? Where am I today? And where am I going to be? And it's just a great way. People, I meet a lot of people who like just are in touch with me over the internet or whatever, like will show up at a funeral. I had a woman who said, I'm actually off of work that day and my daughter's off of school. They drove 5 hours each way to just come to a funeral because she's been following me for so long. She's
wow.
like, I have watched video after video. And now I want to actually participate in one. And I was like, that is so beautiful. And so that's what she did. And that is so meaningful. That for me is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do any fundraising. And so fundraising is not a thing for me, thankfully. But there's just other ways if people want to get in touch with me. Like once I started laying blankets in the grave too, mm-hmm. I just one day I had, I don't know, people were sending me blankets and I thought, I'm going to lay these in the grave before I set the caskets down. Mm-hmm. And I started doing that because it just, like, years ago, the Lord told me it's a cradle in the grave. And then that song came out and I was like, yeah. Oh. And so I put the blankets down and then the caskets. And I have blankets literally from all over the world coming to me. All over the world. People are knitting blankets. I have way more than I need right now because I've just had a huge push for them. But I have so many that have come to me from everywhere. I mean, thousands of them. And so because I also had a cuddle cot ministry, which is, I'm not going to even tell you what it is because it's too long, but people can Google what a cuddle cot is. I've been to so many hospitals all over Indiana and all over this country giving these cooling devices into hospital NICUs. And I've gotten in touch with so many hospitals and supervisors and bereavement teams that now I know they need gowns and they need blankets. And so now we ship. Nice. So when things come to me and I just can't use them, or I have too many, we have days where we sort everything and we just ship everything out to hospitals all over the place. And they get a huge inventory so that when a mom has a loss or whatever, they don't just give her one blanket. They give her a choice. Oh. And most moms say when her baby dies, you know, she's like, I'm out of control. I have no choice in the matter, right? Just happened to me. And you feel like a victim, which you are.
So you're giving her one choice.
Yes. Wow. Choose the gown your baby's buried in. Choose the blanket you want to wrap your baby in. And it's just a way for them to feel like they're not alone.
Yeah.
And it goes back to your other question. Like, I never want anyone to feel alone. And I had a mom reach out to me, a South African mom who lived in Ireland.
Wow.
And she reached out to me and she said she got a diagnosis for her baby and she went to the doctor and she didn't like what he told her. She didn't understand it. It just wasn't anything. She's like, and I've been watching all your stuff and it didn't match. Like the way they were going to treat me and my baby didn't match to what I see you doing over here. So she, in the middle of the night, you know, sends me a direct message on Instagram. And I do read them because people, that's where we do so much ministry, through the comments and through direct messages, even though we get a million of them. But that's where people write and tell their story and want to share or get a resource or something. And she said, I need help. My husband is in South Africa. I'm going to be delivering this baby. And my hospital doesn't know really what to do. There's no bereavement team. There's like the doctor's not whatever. And so I said, let's FaceTime. So I FaceTimed her in Ireland, and I equipped her and I coached her. Then her bereavement director got on the FaceTime and I coached them. And then they went to the doctor with her and advocated for her and shared vision. And they were like, okay, okay, great. They were all about it. And this woman delivered her baby and her baby did not live. But then by the time her husband got home, they were able to have the funeral for this baby and the hospital provided everything.
Wow.
And it was so beautiful. And so, you know, I do a lot of coaching all over the place for people that do see what I'm doing and they just know in their hearts they want something different than what they're being offered at the hospital, especially at rural hospitals or small towns or in small countries.
And that's the power of social media. People can say what they want to say and choose to not partake. And and it can be a bad thing by all means, but wow.
Right.
Without it, you would have never been able to reach a mom in Ireland from South Africa or the amount of people probably, because I'm sure this is not just an Indiana-based thing. You're talking to all over the world, all over the nation. That's the power of social media. We're doing this through social media and spreading the gospel. And what a wonderful thing.
Yes, that is very important. And like you said, there's a lot of people who I hate social media, especially my age. You know, they're not even on it. And I'm like, it is free advertising for me. And I don't mean of me. I mean of the work, right?
Yes.
And so honestly, social media has been the education arm for Safe Haven Law.
Wow.
So when the law was passed in 2000, and then Amelia was found in 2014, the government had not spent a dime on education or awareness in 14 years. Of course, no mother knew about the law.
Yeah.
So babies were being abandoned. Then Amelia comes along and I start screaming from the mountaintops, the Safe Haven Law. And then Monica Kelsey comes along and we change the entire narrative of that law, not only in this state, but in this country. Do you think that there's been no babies found in the state of Indiana out of coincidence? No, it's been because of education.
Yes.
And it's been because of social media and the media. I mean, when the media comes to any event, I thank them profusely because I'm like, you are my free education arm.
Yes.
I don't have to make a brochure. I don't have to go to into schools. I don't have to do any of that because you're doing it for me.
So
and
powerful.
We're reaching hundreds of thousands of people. Yes. Every time we talk about a baby surrendered and we do a press conference and we thank the mother and call her a hero and tell her, like, you made the hardest, best decision you could make for this baby.
Yes.
And then on and on. And so...
And God uses mm-hmm. this. God uses every channel yes. that you choose to put yourself out there. Yes. And if you choose mm-hmm. to do harm, it will, right. you can also do that too. But it is. It's incredible to see the power yes. spreading in ways that we could not do
right.
just a few years ago.
Right.
We could not spread this
right.
this way. So.
And you can use it or it can use you.
Yeah. Well, love that. Very true.
And I feel yes. like I don't do it perfectly. And I mean, I sure do get my fill of things. Mm-hmm. I've been persecuted on there pretty bad. But
oh, gotcha.
It doesn't outweigh the benefits at
yes.
all.
Yes.
At all. And yeah.
And we know who is our protector, right?
Absolutely.
We don't have to fear anything. And the enemy is going to be
right.
Pissed that we're doing something
totally.
For the Lord. So
totally.
There's attack is just a,
yes.
it just means that we're going and heading in the right yeah. direction. That's mm-hmm. how I feel about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your legacy. Would you like to close us in prayer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Heavenly Father, we thank you for giving us your son, the sacrificial gift who died on the cross to give us life afresh. Thank you for raising him from the dead. And showing us that you are a God who builds bridges and makes a way. And you keep your promises. And you make a way for life because you value it and you call it a gift. So we are thankful for our lives. We're thankful for the lives in our families and the people that you have brought to us in our life that are just so life-giving to us and that we get to be life-giving to. And I just pray for the listening audience right now, God. I pray for any hurting mom out there who's lost a child. God, I pray that you would bind up her broken heart. And I thank you that you are familiar and acquainted with sorrow and that you can sit near. And so I pray that you do. You bring healing and restoration. And Lord, I thank you for Karina and her heart. And I pray blessing and favor over her and her ministry as she wants to use her platform to be a voice of love and kindness and the gospel. And I pray that you bless it and you multiply it for the kingdom. And I thank you for all the ways that you have allowed He Knows Your Name to be a voice into so many lives and bring honor and dignity for those that have died. And you have brought together an army of people to say yes and join in the movement of loving people right where they are and giving them a voice to share their story. Because sharing the testimony of Jesus is a beautiful, beautiful way to ignite and illuminate your beautiful love over this community, over our state, over our ministries, and over all of our each of our lives. And you are faithful and you are good. And I just praise your holy name for depositing faith into Karina and into me and letting it be the most sustainable, life-giving thing we have. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you so much for joining us today, friends. I hope you guys are walking away feeling encouraged and maybe even a little lighter. Make sure to subscribe and drop a comment or review so we can keep this faith-filled community growing. Share this episode if it touched you or if you know someone who needs to hear it. Let's spread the love. I'll see you next week on Karina Faith Diaries. And until then, stay strong, stay kind, and keep the faith.